We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Go inside the world of an NCAA Division I athletics program. This is In the Bullseye with University of Buffalo Athletic Director Mark Allnut. Here's the voice of the Bulls, Paul Peck.
Well, hi, everybody, and joined by Mark Allnut, and happy to bring you the latest edition of the In the Bullseye podcast. And Mark, there's a different feeling this week that football looks like all indications are we're going to have it. It's going to start on time. We're going to get what we've so been excited to have, which is football. And you've played a really big role in helping all of that happen and guiding it through your role in the NCAA Football Oversight Committee. But just in general, is there a little different feeling on your end now that you've started to see the football players come back and you have this kind of plan to get everybody ready?
Well, there is. I mean, to be at this point where we are now, to have UB football student athletes on campus, and you look around the nation and other football student athletes on campus, it's definitely a positive sign, and we're hopeful that we continue to progress the way we have been progressing in terms of, you know, the various state guidelines that are out there, and then people following the the CDC, not just recommendations, but again, you know, their guidelines as well as pertains to the what we hear, you know, so much, the physical distancing, the PPE, the hygiene, the sanitizing. I mean, it's very important. So, you know, where we're at right now, I say that I'm still cautiously optimistic in terms of, you know, where we stand from a season standpoint. I mean, we still have, a little less than 3 months away before we kick off in Manhattan, Kansas against K-State. But again, there is hope, which definitely I think we all are appreciative of. And, you know, we want to continue, again, this momentum.
A lot of hard work, as you mentioned, a lot of hard work in working with people like the CDC and the local health departments in New York State have gone into making all of this happen. But again, you have a role on the NCAA Football Oversight Committee, which made a lot of recommendations to the NCAA Council for the right way to start bringing everybody back. So we want to take all our Bulls fans a little bit inside how some of that happened and how you went about making the decisions. Now, we know right now at UB, players are coming back in the small pods to begin their regular summer workouts. But the next important date that will kick in will be July 13th. Tell everybody what starts to happen then.
Well, I want to go back a little bit in terms of where we were and how we got to this July 13th date. You know, it was important to understand back having these conversations into March and all through April and May, and then finally the beginning of June to be able to pinpoint July 13th. You know, for us, it was, again, just the unknown of what was happening with this pandemic. But then also, you know, our focus as a football oversight committee was one about, you know, equity for all. And as you go even further back and look at spring football, there were many institutions that had started their spring football practices. We were one of them that were fortunate. We were probably institution, you know, more so than others that had opportunity to get 9 practices in. But then there was some out there that hadn't even started their spring practices. So as we move forward to the potential of preseason and ramping up to the regular season, we wanted to look at equity in terms of let's just have a consistent date for everybody, and then also be mindful that different states are in different places at that particular time. So at first it was our group having discussions internally with our conferences and putting together what our conference recommended return to play would be. As we examined this and we thought about it, the 10 conferences that are represented in the Football Oversight Committee, and then we have folks from the FCS as well, it was pretty much anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks, in terms of working with our health officials, working with our medical experts, what's the appropriate time for people who have not been, accustomed to, staying home and not having the conditioning that they're used to. So we wanted to focus on, the health and safety aspect of that from that standpoint, but then also realizing where we're at from a pandemic as well. So as we move forward and states started reopening, the numbers were flattening, which we heard, we figured that, wait, why essentially blow up something that's worked in the past? And what I'm talking about is preseason camp, the 29 days prior to your first competition. Let's look at now, since we have a longer runway, and it seems like, more states, if not all states, will be able to hit this July 13th date here. Let's look at the opportunity where we can ramp up activity prior to the preseason camp. So what we landed on, and again, based on consistency, based on an opportunity for, equity amongst, all of our membership. And also a reminder, too, that, when we look at the lower divisions of collegiate football, the Division II and Division III level, they're around that 4-week model anyway. And those programs do not have, summer conditioning where student athletes come back on campus. And they seem to make it work. So, we had to really check ourselves and understand that at the end of the day, if it was 4 weeks needed, that was the minimum we're going to put in there. So going back to the July 13th question that you asked, that is going to be the start of what's called Countable Athletic Related Activity, CARA. And it's an 8-hour period, within that week where, we have the opportunity to flexibility, I should say, if we want to utilize it as all 8 hours of strength and conditioning with Coach Gildersleeve and his staff. Coaches can't be involved with that aspect of it because, it's one of those situations where, our strength and conditioning coach are the ones that have that interaction, with our student athletes, along with our sports medicine folks. So you have 8-hour period beginning July 13th. Now you can, if needed, we can utilize up to 2 hours of that 8-hour period for film review. So coaches can interact with, the various position groups or what have you and start studying film, film from spring football, film of our upcoming opponent, K-State, whatever the case might be. So that was a critical period to get there. And as you see on that calendar, that July 13th through July 23rd is that 8-hour period per week where we can have activity with our student athletes. Now, everything up until that July 13th date is voluntary. Now, the only change is the fact that, as we all mentioned, is that now with various states, you know, allowing our student athletes to have access, again, following all the protocol and guidelines, which we've talked about numerous times, that, you know, we have that opportunity now to interact with our student athletes on a voluntary basis. And again, that's just our strength and conditioning staff.
Before we get to the next date, two things I want to follow up. It's funny you mentioned it. Nobody knows how to get a team prepared, experienced in the lower divisions without summer workouts better than your coach does in Lance Leipold. And I think that's going to help. But what I really wanted to ask you about was this came up in some discussions earlier in the week with Dr. Brian Brada, who has really helped lay out a lot of your medical, conditioning requirements. They really look back at past situations where there was inactivity by players that they weren't used to, and there's been some concern about bringing him back too fast and how it leads to injuries. How important was that factor in all of this?
Well, very important. And first of all, give so much credit to Dr. Brian Brada and the work that he's brought to the table, the work he's done in terms of putting together a detailed plan and collaboration, again, with our team doctors, you know, with our facilities folks, with Matt Gildersleeve. I mean, there's so many. It was such a collaborative effort. It's unbelievable. But, you know, what he brought to the table was just a study of, you know, athletes in the past, you know, whether it was professional athletes who, you know, had time off due to strike or whatever the various reasons are, and then them coming back and putting them through the ringer, so to speak, early on, causing, you know, more soft tissue injuries, hamstrings, or whatever the case might be. So we had to be very smart, you know, about it and be able to phase, you know, our student athletes, you know, back into the grooves. So you intentionally look at it as almost like an acclimatization period for strength and conditioning. Now with this volunteer period, but even more so when it's more mandatory come July 13th. And just to clarify for the people out there, you know, the Football Oversight Committee, I'm fortunate enough to represent the Mid-American Conference, but there is a representative that represents all 10 conferences, you know, whether they're sitting ADs like myself or even potential conference administrators. But, you know, also what the voice that's also at the table there, which is very valuable, is the executive director of the AFCA, and that's the American Football Coaches Association. His name is Todd Berry, and he has constant dialogue, you know, with our coaches and being able to bring that coach perspective. One member of his executive board is Coach Fitzpatrick at
Northwestern.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and very highly respectable coach, and be able to hear, you know, what he has to say. And then even when I'm not on the call, you know, I have, you know, very engaged conversation with Lance Leipold just to get his thoughts. As you mentioned earlier, I mean, if a person's going to know how to prepare a team and prepare a team to win championships, you know, that's Lance Leipold at that Division III level, and how it can, you know, obviously transition to this level.
All right. So after the as you've described what's going to go on beginning on July 13th to July 23rd, there's another road mark that kicks in on July 24th. How much is that different from what the players will have started with?
Well, as I mentioned, the July 13th period is an 8-hour CARA period. Now, the July 24th period is extends to 20 hours per week. Okay, so very similar to the weekly hour limitation that they would have during the academic year. Now, the difference there is, you know, we felt the need, again, with schools not completing their spring practices, with schools not even starting their spring practices, there was this concept that was brought up that the NFL uses, and you people out here that's watching this, they've heard it before, OTA. Mm-hmm. And essentially what OTA is the ability to do some football work, you know, during a period. Again, not full practice, not throwing on the pads, not doing anything like you normally see preseason practice. But, you know, the opportunity to have some walkthroughs, opportunity to utilize a football, which traditionally that isn't allowed during this period. So the 8-hour period is now extended to 20 hours. There's still that 8-hour component of strength and conditioning. Again, going back to what you mentioned about Brian Brada, mm-hmm. I mean, we still need to condition our folks. We still need to acclimate their bodies to prepare them for football. But now we have a 6-hour period, you know, within those 20 hours. of walkthrough, okay? So walkthrough with the football, which is important because in the past, you weren't allowed to have a football. So now there's an opportunity to utilize a football and do walkthroughs. Again, not full speed, you know, 7-on-7 as you're accustomed to when you, you know, watch our many practices, but be able to line up in formations, be able to, you know, look at blocking assignments, be able to look at, you know, how you're going to cover this. You know, being able to have a football out there is very helpful. In addition to that 6-hour period, there's another 6 hours of meetings, which allow for video review as well. So, you know, coach, he can divide up that 6 hours with team meetings, with unit meetings, with position meetings, with individual meetings. You can watch film. So as long as you don't go over that 20-hour period, there's that opportunity. And then since it's 2 weeks, you know what, we have to give our student-athletes a mandatory day off. So 1 day off, you know, during that 2-week period.
Yeah, I think, you know, particularly football fans in Western Europe are very familiar with the OTA concept, organized team activities, for people that are wondering what it stands for. They've seen the Bills certainly do that for many, many years, exactly the way that you described it. So if we're using the NFL model as the equivalent, then the start of training camp, quote unquote, for college football is going to come on August 7th, which is sort of backdated 29 days, as you mentioned, from the start of the season for most teams, including the Bulls, will be September the 5th. So is that essentially what we're used to seeing of a normal quote-unquote training camp?
That's what we're used to seeing. So what happens there is you still have that 5-day acclimatization period where, you know, your first 2 days, the only equipment you can wear, your helmets. The next 2 days is your uppers, so shoulder pads and helmets. And that last day, you can put on full pads. And then as you move throughout that time period, you know, you have, there's no more two-a-days. So that's been.
How many times have you told current players what two-a-days were like back?
Oh, yeah, they, two-a-days. They're probably thinking, I don't know what they're thinking when you tell them two-a-days. Maybe two naps per day is, you know, current players might think about nowadays.
And when you played, two-a-days were like 2.5-hour practices twice a day.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. You know what? No regulation. I mean, you could have about 10 days of two-a-days, you know, straight. And then you might get that break to go to the movie or something like that. And you're like, wow, coach, thank you. And then when you're at the movie, no telling how exciting that movie was. You're probably sleeping anyway, because you're so tired. So, but again, you know, you have those practice opportunities. You get 25 practice opportunities, you know, prior to that first day of competition. So again, there's no hour limitation. And the only time you hit an hour limitation is when school starts, as I mentioned earlier. So once school starts, it goes to that 20-hour period, you know, per week. So That's where we are. That's what we put together. So people might ask, again, that's leading up to our game against K-State on September 5th. So, Mark, what if, you know, a team started like last year? You know, we kicked off the season against Robert Morris on that Thursday night game. So what if that game on K-State would be on Thursday, you know, September 3rd? So now we would just push everything up 2 days. So instead of August 7th being the preseason camp date, it'd be August 5th. Instead of July 24th, it'd be July 22nd. Instead of July 13th, it'd be July 11th. So there is that shift, so to speak, for, you know, those teams that might be starting September 3rd, or when you hear the concept of week zero games. So week zero games are the Saturday prior to Labor Day. So I don't know what the date on the calendar in front of me, but it might be August 30th or whatever the case might be, August 29th. So, you know, those institutions have the ability to now, you know what, bump everything up a week. So instead of July 13th, it's July 6th. Instead of July 24th, it is July 17th. So on and on. And also the one change, too, that we forgot to hit on is in the past, we've had a roster limitation during the preseason camp aspect of this. So this is that August the 7th date that we're talking about. And that limit is 110 student-athletes on your roster. So you can't go over 110 individuals. Now, the only way you can go over 110, hey, Paul Peck, you know what? He was at the beach.
You're going to cut me here, aren't you?
Yeah, he was at the beach the entire year. You know what? He's a gamer. Felt like he didn't need a run over the summer. You know what? Paul Peck pulls his hamstring during camp. Well, Mark Allnut, you know, the guy who is, first of all, upset, mad that, you know, you're starting in front of me or whatever the case is, and I'm that
I'm that fifth stringer.
Well, you know what? They call in Mark Allnut to replace you. It's, you know, we have the flexibility to replace. So, first of all, I mean, a lot of our, from the Mid-American Conference standpoint, there's not too many rosters that have significant numbers, over 110 anyway. Our roster is around that number to begin with. So it's really not that significant change. But people might ask, okay, well, why would you put a limitation on this? Again, just the period that we're in, you know, we're looking at minimizing travel, you know, for our student athletes, not just in football, in other sports. And you would see with the announcement that came out from our university that, you know, come Thanksgiving break, you know, students are going to go home. And they're going to finish the last 2 weeks of the semester remotely, and then they're going to take their finals remotely because, you know, what we all thought about, and again had these conversations with our health experts, is, you know, we want to minimize risk of COVID-19 and feel that, you know, if you're letting people leave and then come back like we've done in the past, generally we've had, you know, a few days before camp where we tell kids to take off. You know, go back home, relax, don't concentrate on football. You've done so much great work leading up to the preseason, and then come back. You know, now since we have them here and you know, we have the protocols in place, you know, we've already done the baseline testing. You know, we don't want them to go somewhere and potentially be at risk for this disease, and they come back and affect others. So that's why, you know, we're looking at, again, as an institution, actually, I would say as a body, NCAA as a membership, that, you know, when we start bringing in student athletes of all sports, you know, we're going to be very cognizant in terms of, all right, once you're here, let's stay here, and not worry about, you know, going home and then coming back. You know what, we want to keep them here again, just to minimize risk.
So I think as we look at it as a big picture, Mark, I think a lot of us are going to wonder, how has this incredibly unpredictable and different offseason going to affect the product that we're going to see starting in September? And to me, it sounds like the way that this has been decided is it's not all that much different. So with that said, do you expect the ability to play catch up and the additional work and most of everything starting on time that we'll see what we would have normally seen had there not been a pandemic this offseason?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see too much of a difference, to be honest with you. You know, give credit to our student athletes, you know, being creative, you know, at home, wherever they went to and wherever they've been the last few months to, you know, stay in shape in some way, shape, or form. Now, again, you know, possibly not at the conditioning level as if, you know, we would have had them here, you know, going through everything. But, you know, I strongly believe that, you know, our kids just weren't sitting around, you know, binge watching Netflix or what have you. You know, they were busy too. So, you know, with this runway that we have now, you know, prior to the season, starting with volunteer workouts, where we're phasing back, you know, our football student athletes, and we're going to phase back our other student athletes come July. And, you know, the addition of, you know, the additional period of OTAs, that 20-hour care period, and then, you know, going through camp, you know, I feel that we've done everything we can to, again, ensure the health and safety of our student athletes who are going to be competing. But also, you know what, when we get to the season, you know, we hope that the fans don't see a significant drop off in competition.
Well, speaking of that season, I think some of this news has allowed people to start to think about the football part of it. And I know some of the preseason magazines have started to come out. That always gets me excited and starting to think about the season. Your team's getting a lot of love, getting a lot of publicity nationally, predicted by a number of places to be one of the top teams, maybe even the MAC championship team to beat. Just on a football note, how excited are you? Assuming that we're going to see a normal lead up to the season, how excited are you about what the 2020 Bulls have the ability to do?
Well, it just shows you the tremendous amount of respect that's out there for our program, the respect for Coach Leipold and the job he's been able to do here at Buffalo. You know, being able to climb to such new heights that never been achieved at the Division I level. You know, people take notice. People take notice of the quality student athletes that you have. And, you know, we can name, you know, the list, you know, of guys who are on the preseason magazines for all
11
MACs.
11 of them, by the way, on one exactly. set of preseason yeah, that's, all that's, conference
that's,
teams.
That's one side of the ball, you know. That's a good number to have there. But for us is, you know, we, as always, I mean, we very appreciative, but also, too, you know what, we need to continue to do the hard work that's already ingrained in this program to help us be able to achieve those goals that are out there. And again, I'm excited for the season. And as I've told you before offline, you know, for me, you know, I might get emotional when, you know, we're able to get on that plane and go to Manhattan, Kansas for the first mm-hmm. game, because that would mean that we're playing football. So, you know, for us, again, I mean, you asked that question about earlier on about, you know, playing football, you know, it's everyone's opinion. Everyone has a thought. You know, some are optimistic, some are pessimistic, but again, I feel that, you know, what we're doing here. And again, that's credit for, you know, people who are watching this, credit to people who have really bought into, you know, what we need to do as a society to help, you know, lessen this thing. So it's positive, and let's keep the momentum going. And the last thing I'd have to say is, you know, again, if we're able to play, you know, the last obstacle or hurdle or whatever you want to call it is, you know, what do the games look like? I mean, are we going to be allowed to have fans in the games? You know, if so, you know, that's great, but we know that it's going to be at a reduced capacity. From my guess, it's not going to be business as usual. How do you enter the stadium? You know, how do you go to your seats? Where do you sit in the stadium? Let's talk about concessions. What does that look like? Let's talk about the restrooms. Who's on the sidelines now? You know, is it just working personnel, you know, only? I might be able to sneak down the sidelines. I hope I have some type of working personnel. You know, I mean, what, you
got
know.
A little clout.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, the band, you know, are they going to be allowed on the field? Let's hope so. The pageantry of the game, you know, the band, the cheerleaders, you know, the promotions. I mean, do we do things? I mean, so it's going to look a lot different, you know, regardless if there is a season. We just need to be prepared for it, and we're going to communicate at a high level in terms of what our fans expect when coming to a Bulls game this upcoming season.
Yeah, as those plans get formulated, I'm sure you and I will connect on one of these In the Bullseye podcasts and really dive into it so everybody knows. Last thing we want to talk about as we leave everybody here is shift gears to a different sport, because there were some updates on the basketball players getting back. We know that their summers are busy as well, too, to get themselves ready for the start of their practices. So what's the update on the men's and women's basketball teams at UB?
Well, the NCAA just came out with a decision, and I know they're looking at more clarification, you know, on it. I should say they're going to elaborate more and just provide more details, you know, on this decision. But when we talked about those care hours, accountable athletic-related activities, looking at for men's and women's basketball to begin that July 20th, which is, again, good news for us. I mean, but very similar to what we did for football. I mean, you can throw dates, you know, out there. But, you know, we're going to have a detailed plan in terms of what that looks like. So it's not just, you know, all of our student athletes, you know, showing up at once. You know, how are we going to phase that in, and how are we going to make it work? Again, and people get tired of me hearing this, but just really ensuring that, you know, we're up to speed and just following all the guidelines out there and the health and safety of our student athletes and even our staff who interact with them on a daily basis. That's going to be priority, you know, for us. So, you know, more to come on basketball. The other news that came out is also trying to find a date for our other fall sports to be able to get back on campus and start some type of, you know, strength and conditioning activity. You know, that decision hasn't come out yet. Hopefully a decision in the next, you know, 7 to 10 days in regards to our fall sports, our other fall sports. So with that, you're talking about for us, you know, women's soccer, volleyball and cross country.
Right. All right. So, you and your cohorts at UB, and particularly those on the NCAA committee, have done an incredible job the last few months. So you've had to learn about things that you probably never thought that you'd ever have to know about, and you've become an expert on things that you probably never expected. But that's, I guess, part of the job, right? And it's been a lot of hard work, but ultimately, as it looks like we're going to get football when and all of the sports back when they're supposed to be, that must mean you've done an awfully nice job.
Yeah, no, thanks, Paul. I mean, it's work on so many different individuals, you know, again, working collaboratively with each other, you know, in that environment. I mean, everyone's going to have their own issue. You know, everyone's going to, you know, voice, hey, here's what's happening in New York as compared to, all right, here's what's happening down in Alabama or another part of the United States. But to really be able to set aside, you know, all of our challenges and just look at it collectively, I give credit to the group of individuals that I'm fortunate to work with, you know, at the NCAA Football Oversight Committee level, and, you know, also acknowledge the individuals that, you know, we get to work with that help guide us, you know, obviously going back to our staff, you know, our people on our respective campuses, you know, the health experts out there, you know, our doctors and, you know, other folks at NCAA that gives us, you know, the data and the resources to make informed decisions.
All right. Appreciate the time, Mark. As always, appreciate the insight. And again, we'll have more of this as things continue to kind of develop here. But all encouraging signs, as always. And again, Mark playing a key role in all of that happening. Appreciate the time. And we'll catch up with you soon enough here. Mark Allnutt, University of Buffalo Director of Athletics, joining us on this edition of the In the Bullseye podcast.
For more information on the athletics program at the University of Buffalo, visit ubbulls.com/podcast. This has been In the Bullseye, a proud presentation of Bulls Digital.